1460 WVOX.
Stay tuned now on 1460 WVOX for The Ballot Box with your hosts Tamar Tate and Nita Lubin. The Ballot Box is a monthly program brought to you by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. Now, The Ballot Box on 1460 WVOX.
Good morning and welcome to the first broadcast of The Ballot Box, VOX's monthly radio show sponsored, as you've just heard, by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. My name is Nina Luban and I'm here with my co-host, Tamar Tate. Tamar, how are you doing this morning?
Great, Nina. I am so excited to be here in the WVOX studio launching our very first production of The Ballot Box. And I'd like to thank everyone who's listening today for joining us. If we accomplish anything this morning, I hope we're able to give our listeners an idea of why it's so important for all of us to take action, get involved in our community, and vote. Please note, we will not be taking any callers on our show today because we will have a very special guest joining us in a few minutes.
Thanks, Tamar. Tamar and I are both members of the New Rochelle branch of the League. However, we are at quite different stages in our connection to this esteemed 100-year-old organization. Tamar is a veteran member of the League and currently serves on its New Rochelle board. I, on the other hand, have only just become a member.
Nina, why did you join?
Good question. Simple answer. At your urging, Tamar, I took a close look at the League. Thank you, Professor Google. And began to understand how profoundly this organization is woven into the fabric of our democracy. It was formed almost exactly 100 years ago, 1920.
With the passage of the 19th Amendment.
Correct. To educate the citizenry, and yes, in particular, those millions of women about to enter polling places for the first time, thanks to that amendment, to educate citizens as to both their voting rights and their rights to advocate for their beliefs, and to achieve that goal of education in a nonpartisan manner. Neither then, 100 years ago, nor today, does the League support political candidates or political parties. It supports democracy. It provides the tool, education, without which a democracy cannot stand.
You know, Nina, I became involved in the League of Women Voters out of concern for certain issues, both on the national and local levels, that were making me increasingly uncomfortable. There's a lot of talk about what's referred to as fake news today, and I felt like there had to be nonpartisan resources out there for those of us who wanted to become more educated about things that affect us on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. That's exactly the role of the League of Women Voters. That's the role we try to fill. As a nonpartisan organization, we try to educate, not politically influence. Through our national voter guides, candidate forums, and educational programming, the League of Women Voters focuses on the ways that people can engage in democracy with purpose.
Thanks, Tamar. And let's just note that despite the name League of Women Voters, thousands of men belong today, both as members and in leadership positions. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that there's at least one man serving on the New Rochelle board with
There you. Are a number of men on the New Rochelle chapter of the League of Women Voters, and we encourage anyone who'd like to get more involved in the electoral process to join.
Agreed.
So this morning, as I said earlier, we have a special guest. And her name is Professor Jean Zeno. Professor Zeno has an extensive resume that, if read, would take us through the full broadcast. So please consider what I'm going to say as highlights only in my introduction. Professor Zeno is an award-winning professor of political science and international studies at Iona College. She was awarded her doctorate in political science in 2004 and became a faculty member at Iona College in 2002. Professor Zeno teaches various courses on government. She's an expert on electoral politics, and her ideas have been adopted by governments, industries, and other organizations throughout the world. Dr. Zeno's work has been published in various journals. She's a best-selling author. She's been a contributor on major news outlets. Professor Zeno herself, by the way, is a supporter of the League of Women Voters. She delivered our League's first Edith Corbin Memorial Lecture this past summer entitled Seeds of Failure, courts, Congress, the Constitution, and voting rights. So, Professor Zaino, are you there?
I am. It's so good to talk to you.
It's great to have you on the Ballot Box, and thank you for helping us to inaugurate our show.
Thank you for having me, and congratulations on your new show. That's very, very exciting.
Thank you very much, Professor. This is Nina. I'm adding my welcome to Tamar's. And I'd like to note that I attended your Edith Corbin Memorial Lecture at Iona in September and found it pretty much a three-credit course in itself. It was informative, very calming during these turbulent times, and chock full of historical perspective. My sister's an American history buff, and after I described parts of that lecture to her, she's preparing to contact Iona to see about auditing your classes.
Oh, we would love to have her. No, thank you so much. And it was really such an honor to deliver that lecture. And obviously, Edith Corbin, you know, what an amazing woman. And her son and her daughter-in-law were in attendance at the memorial lecture. Yes. And you know, it was really, really special to have them there. And, of course, the work she did with the League and also in the community in New Rochelle and in Westchester, it's so wonderful to have her remembered like that every year by the League. So I was really honored to deliver it. And, of course, we did it on Constitution Day, September 17th. Mm-hmm. And so we tried to talk about the Constitution and to talk about voting because, of course, we're heading straight into an election year. So tried to stick it all in at once.
So why don't we start there? League of Women Voters is all about voting, and let's be historical about it. We've got local elections coming up in a few weeks, and soon our national elections. Voting is a right enshrined in our Constitution. So my question is, if the framers popped up for a visit during our elections, what parts of their vision would they recognize, and what parts of our voting process would they not recognize?
You know, the way that our system is today would be almost wholly unrecognizable to our framers. And I think, you know, it's really important to put into perspective that while they did enshrine voting in the Constitution, they enshrined it for a very narrow franchise, and that would be in many states, it was restricted to white property-owning men. So, you know, I think that's really the first lesson to keep in mind, is that when the framers set out to write the Constitution, they decided to leave voting in the hands of the states. So we essentially have 50 different voting systems in this country. Another wonderful League member, Peter Korn, is a neighbor of mine, and he just pulled up to my driveway yesterday and handed me out a pamphlet which said, you can now vote early in New Rochelle, mm-hmm. or in New York, as we know. And it's a big change for us. But of course, other states have had that for many, many years, which again is to underscore the fact that our framers did not give voting the voting system and control over voting to the federal government. They left it at the state level, and hence it has taken a lot of different amendments to expand the franchise and to protect this right that we all are so lucky to enjoy. So it's a fight that has to happen essentially at 50 different state legislatures across the country.
And let me ask you, does the focus... is there one region of the country really that the focus is greater on enhancing the franchise?
You know, it is switched historically. You know, we had states that for many, many, many decades and years before we got the 19th Amendment were allowing women to vote. But of course, the 19th Amendment ensures that for women, regardless of which state they live in. Similarly, you know, when you look at the Civil War amendments and the right to vote regardless of race, some states allowed it, some states didn't. I would say right now what we've seen in terms of regional differences is that states that were controlled by the federal government under the Voting Rights Act, that after the case that we talked about during the lecture, after that case, the Shelby case, were removed from sort of the eye of the federal government, those have been the states that have moved the quickest to change their voting laws.
And so, Dr. Zaino, I'm wondering,
like Texas.
Yeah. That music means we need to take a break, but I'm
sure.
Hoping we can get back to the Shelby case as soon as we get back.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks. We'll be right back.
bureaucrats and City Hall types aren't exactly thrilled when you take to the airwaves to spout off and tell it like it is on WVOX, now Westchester's only community station.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
There's a disappointing report on the economy. Retail sales declined in September, slipping 0.3%. Economists were predicting an increase. It's the first monthly decline since February. Excluding auto sales, retail sales slipped 0.1%. However, revised numbers indicate retail sales rose in August by 0.6%, more than previously estimated. Bank of America saw business improve in the summer in its consumer, wealth, and commercial businesses. Its earnings were strong. Than expected. Your purchases on the Apple Card are not being reported to credit bureaus. MarketWatch says a source close to Goldman Sachs, which issues the card, says companies will begin reporting the information later this year. The issue is believed to be related to the card being a brand new product. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Ginny Cosolda, invested in you.
How can a fully stocked restroom improve your image? How can serviced fire extinguishers or a first aid cabinet make your employees more prepared? How can comfortable work apparel make your business more productive? For over a million customers, the answer is simple. Cintas. Cintas delivers everything you need to open your doors with confidence. Because helping keep businesses well-equipped, clean, and looking their best, that's our business.
Oh, I'm ready!
Get Cintas and get ready for the workday.
Come fly with us every day on America's legendary community station, WVOX, for you and yours at 1460 on your AM dial or streaming live right now at WVOX.com. Better yet, download the WVOX app and take us with you wherever you go.
1460 WVOX.
Let's return now to the ballot box with your hosts, Tamar Tate and Nita Lubin, brought to you by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. Once again, the ballot box on 1460 WVOX.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Professor Jean Zeno, award-winning political science and international studies teacher at Iona College. And Professor Zeno was just about to speak to the Shelby case, which caused a lot of controversy, discussion, please, Professor Zeno, enlighten us.
Well, the Shelby County case was a very famous voting case in 2013, so not that long ago. And essentially what the case was it was a case that was brought by a county in Alabama to challenge the Voting Rights Act. And as most of your listeners, I'm sure, remember, the Voting Rights Act was put into place in the mid-1960s in order to protect the right to vote that after Jim Crow was being restricted to people of African Americans, to women, to people that are poor and others in various states. So the Voting Rights Act was designed to protect our right to vote. And as part of that act, what they said was that certain counties and states that had been restricting that right to vote, any time they went to change a voting law, they had to check with the federal government. And Congress had repeatedly updated that law without changing the states that were in the localities that were covered by the law. And by 2013, many states and localities were very frustrated, saying, you know, listen, it's been since the 1960s. We haven't done anything wrong. We should be able to change our voting laws. And so the Supreme Court took the case and they said that Congress had dropped the ball. They shouldn't have just kept renewing the law. They should have looked back and changed those restricted localities. Since they hadn't done it, the Supreme Court overturned the Voting Rights Act, and we do not have a Voting Rights Act in place now. And what that has allowed is that has allowed in 2014 was the first midterm, 2016, the first presidential election, where states and localities can change voting laws without checking with the federal government. So, as a result, we've seen states like Texas pass very restrictive voting rights laws, saying things like you need to have one of five forms of ID in order to vote, which ended up disenfranchising about 500,000 people in the state of Texas. Most of them poor and most of them of color.
I'm curious why did it. It seems like most people do have access to some kind of identification. Is it because it's expensive to get identification?
Well, in that case, what Texas did, and this is just one example, is they restricted your identification to one of five pieces of identification. And in order to get those identifications, you had particularly examples of, say, an elderly poor person in Texas who was born, say, in Alabama, would have to go back to Alabama, get their original birth mm-hmm. certificate, bring it to Texas, mm-hmm. and then get their voter ID because they don't drive or things like that. And for somebody living on assistance, they simply can't afford the cost of getting those IDs. So it was things like that which made it particularly onerous. Now, I do think there is an argument to be made that a voter ID is not such a bad thing. The problem is you have to make sure it's accessible mm-hmm. at little or no cost to people who cannot afford it, and Texas did not do that.
Has anyone challenged them in the courts?
Absolutely. That has been challenged in the courts. Part of it is still working its way through several court systems. And again, Texas is not alone. You had several states changing their voting laws in the period right after the day the Shelby decision was released in 2013, all the way through to today. And that really did have a real impact on the 2014, 2016, and again, 2018 elections. We'll see it again in 2020. Since then, unfortunately, Congress has been unable or unwilling to renew the Voting Rights Act or pass a new Voting Rights Act in a way that would pass the court's eye. And so this has been a real problem. I think it's another example of what we've seen as a problem with Congress, unable to tackle really, really tough, contentious issues, and they've taken sort of a hands-off approach.
You said you saw a large impact in the elections immediately following. What exactly was the nature of that impact?
The nature of the impact is things like restricting the franchise for people who are poor or restricting the franchise for minorities in various states. Where the Voting Rights Act had come from was a state legislators in various states who would say you're run by the Democrats, so the Democrats want to keep their people voting and make sure Republicans don't get a say, they will pass laws to restrict the right of Republicans to vote or people who they think are Republican. And that's sort of what's been happening across the country in various states. So that's what Texas did. And the example I always give students, and this is not to pick on Texas because they're not alone, but what Texas had did, one of the five forms of ID they allowed people to vote with was a gun registration license. But they did not allow students with a public university identification mm-hmm. to vote. And so that's an example of a very clear attempt by the legislature of Texas, which was Republican at the time, to ensure that people who would probably vote Republican could vote more easily than people who they fear, and I think their fear is not, you know, really founded in much fact, but who they fear might be more liberal and support Democrats. And again, Texas is not alone. This is politics. People do this all the time. That's why the federal government was overseeing these changes under the Voting Rights Act to ensure that they were fair. And unfortunately, after the court's decision, that all went by the wayside.
So in the local elections in Texas and these other states, we're seeing a red wave as a result.
We did, and I think there was a clear impact in 2014, some clear impacts in 2016. 2018, you had a larger turnout amongst Democrats, so it was a little bit less so. But absolutely, and again, it is Democrats and Republicans who can manipulate the system this way, and that's why you want it to be fair. And you want to make sure, I mean, there's, you know, what defines you as a democracy, particularly a representative democracy, is the fact that you have allowed for free, fair, transparent elections. That's why so much of what has happened in 2016 has caused so much consternation. That's why when the Shelby decision came out, so many people were frustrated, because we don't have a law in this country if we can't protect the right to vote, which, of course, is a major part of what the League of Women Voters was founded on, certainly. And we have to work very hard to ensure that it is not a partisan fix and that it is a fair process, a transparent process, and that there is not, you know, muddling by foreign entities, and that it is protected for everybody, regardless of their skin color, regardless of gender, regardless of their class, religion, or anything else.
You know, this is such an important and fundamental issue. I'm just wondering why we don't hear more about it in this national conversation that we're having leading up to the elections. And hopefully, when we get back from our break, we can explore that a little further.
with world and national news. Here is the latest update from Fox News Radio on 1460 WVOX.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. Turkey's President Erdogan says he'll only speak with President Trump about a ceasefire in Syria, not Vice President Pence or Secretary of State Mike Pompeo when they fly to Turkey today. Pompeo says he expects to speak with Erdogan.
We need them to stand down. We need a ceasefire, at which point we can begin to put this all back together again.
Secretary Pompeo on Fox Business Network. All 12 candidates at the Democrats' debate in Ohio say they agree with impeachment. Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders on CNN.
No one is above the law, and that includes the President of the United States.
The idea that we have a President of the United States who is prepared to hold back national security money to one of our allies in order to get dirt on a presidential candidate is beyond comprehension.
Warren took the most shots from the other Democrats on stage as a now co-front runner in the polls with Joe Biden. America's listening to Fox News.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. The Army National Guard responds to disasters such as wildfires and floods. They protect us with missile defense, cybersecurity, and civilian support teams for chemical, biological, and radiological hazards. Be there for your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the New York Army National Guard. Aired by the New York State Broadcasters Association and this station.
I'm Catherine Miller, founder of the Miller Law Group in New Rochelle. Divorce is hard. People are uncertain and all kinds of fears come up. Divorce is also complicated. During divorce, you're untangling threads from so many aspects of your life, your finances, your children, your legal status. I believe in taking an integrative approach to divorce because divorce happens at the intersection of where you've been and where you're going. It should point you in the direction that you want to go in, taking into account the things that are important to you, taking into account your children. You have a choice as to how to make those decisions. You can do it with compassion and heart and focus rather than reaction, anger, with thoughts of revenge. Give me a call and let's talk about it. 914-738-7765 or find me online, www.westchesterfamilylaw.com.
And now with your latest up-to-date forecast, here's Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather on 1460 WVOX.
Updated weather forecast for today, calling for an increase in clouds with the possibility of some rain later this afternoon, mostly tonight. High temperatures in the mid-60s and gusty east-southeast winds. Rain, possibly a thunderstorm tonight. Could be heavy downpours, too. Overnight lows down near 50. It'll be windy on east winds. Wind shift around to the west on Thursday. Might be an early shower, then partly sunny. Highs near 60. Some wind gusts up to 40 miles per hour in the afternoon. At night, mostly cloudy near 50. Friday, partial sunshine, 60. Looks like fair weather this weekend. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for 1460 WVOX, a Whitney Global Media Station.
Fasten your seatbelts. You're airborne with a completely unpredictable WVOX, where something's always happening. At 1460 on your AM dial and streaming live right now at WVOX.com. Download the WVOX app and take us with you wherever you go.
1460 WVOX.
Let's return now to the Ballot Box with your hosts, Tamar Tate and Nita Lubin, brought to you by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. Once again, the Ballot Box on 1460 WVOX.
Welcome back. We're on the line with Professor Jean Zeno, and we've asked her to make some predictions about the implications, the impact of the Shelby case on our upcoming national elections. Anything different, or do you think that we'll be continuing along this vein of seeing increased voter restrictions?
Well, I couldn't agree more. Before you went to break, you had mentioned that we haven't heard a lot of discussion about this so far in the 2020 election, and I couldn't agree more. It is a real problem. Last night, obviously, I don't know how late you two could stay up, but the Democratic primary debate was on for 3 hours on CNN, and I don't recall one question, if I'm correct about this, that had to do with the right to vote. There was, you know, a few questions about impeachment and Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And some of that does touch on this issue of foreign intervention, but, you know, nothing directly on protecting the right to vote. And I don't think it's an issue that's on the top of most voters' minds. And so the candidates don't talk about it a lot. Some of them, you know, do have plans out there, but it's not a big issue for voters, and that, which is frustrating because it really, really should be. And I think until and unless we see action by Congress on this, like so many other issues, things will roughly stay the same. At this point, states that want to in any way restrict voting and can pass that through their state legislature and can get a governor to sign it, right, are going to be able to do that unrestricted by the federal government. And that will persist until Congress acts. There are pieces of legislation out there that have long been considered, you know, long since 2013, but we've seen no real action. I think if you look it up now, most of those bills, they say, have about a 1 or 2% chance of passage at this point. And I can, you know, I'm not a betting person, but I bet this, that nothing will pass Congress of that sort before the 2020 election.
Well, I think one of the reasons it's not on the front burner of our national conversation is there's just not enough information getting to Americans that their voting rights are being infringed upon. And that's one of the reasons we're so happy to have you on the show today, hopefully reaching more people and inspiring them to get along and really start some kind of grassroots movement.
This is why I would just say that the work that the League, and they are not alone, but certainly they're, the, I would say, one of the oldest and leading organizations, and they are similar to, you know, some of these issues. They are in, I think, every state and certainly across the country. So people can join the League. And again, I was so glad you mentioned it's not just for women. Men too, wonderful men too, are members. And it's important because this is their goal. I mean, they, you know, people can get a lot of information from the League's website, which is a wonderful website, which tells you an awful lot of the legislation at the state level and the federal level that's being considered and what people can do to get involved in these issues.
Yeah, well, one of the topics you touched on a few minutes ago is, I guess, the elephant in the room, which is the impeachment inquiry. Maybe you can give us an update on where the inquiry now stands and what implication it holds for our democracy going forward.
Well, what we understand is the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, will not hold a vote to hold the impeachment inquiry. So we are in an impeachment inquiry stage. There has not been a vote. She said there will not be a vote on that. There is no requirement that they vote on that. Obviously, if you look at the Constitution, it is very clear that the House can impeach, the Senate can try those impeachments. We have seen by practice a vote held for both Nixon and Clinton, the two most recent inquiries, but she has said that will not happen. And now you have the House committees holding these closed door, or in some cases open, but in many cases closed door hearings. They are subpoenaing witnesses. They are hearing testimony from witnesses. They are subpoenaing documents. One of the reasons the Democrats and the leadership wanted to move to an impeachment inquiry stage was because it gives them more legal wiggle room, if you will, to force the White House to turn over documents and to allow people to come and testify. So that was one of the benefits of moving to an inquiry stage. But at this point, what we hear is the Democrats in the House want to get this, quote unquote, wrapped up by the end of the year. I think it's a very short time frame. You know, so if they can do it, I think they're going to have to restrict much of what they do to the Ukrainian issue and not, you know, move into other areas like emoluments and other things. But they say they want to wrap this up before the first vote is taken in the primary. You know, people who did watch the debate last night heard Anderson Cooper, the moderator from CNN, ask a very important question to the Democrats, which was, why a year from the election are you not letting voters just vote President Trump out if they don't like him? Why move to this impeachment stage? And the Democrats provided an answer, and I think there was widespread agreement amongst the 12 of them as to why. But it's a real question on voters' minds. And I know I talk to students about this all the time, liberals or conservatives, they sometimes say, you know, even if I don't like what he's done, why not just let us at this point vote him out? Why do this? And I think it's a real question. I don't know if I heard myself a really good answer to that question, but Anderson Cooper did pose it to the Democrats on stage last night.
Did Nancy Pelosi say there would be no vote at all, ever, or just at this time?
No vote, and I should clarify this, for an impeachment inquiry. There will be a vote, I believe, if the Judiciary Committee gathers the evidence from the six committees that are working on this and draws up articles of impeachment. they would vote on the articles, those would get sent to the floor, and then there would be a floor vote on the articles of impeachment. That may absolutely go forward. She said nothing about that. But what she's talking about is the White House has been pushing for her to hold an impeachment inquiry vote. In other words, force representatives in the House to go on the record supporting the inquiry or not supporting it. And she has said she will not hold that impeachment inquiry vote. But again, the articles vote, if they drop articles and the House Judiciary Committee votes them out under Jerry Nadler, or a New Yorker, obviously, those would be sent to the floor, and then there would be a floor vote on that. And if it passed, those would go to the Senate, and the Senate would try the impeachment. And, of course, Chief Justice John Roberts would sit in judgment of that trial, just as Chief Justice Rehnquist did before him for President Clinton.
And I guess the real question is, if it came to that, what teeth would that proceeding actually have?
What? I'm sorry.
What teeth? What kind of effect does it does it have going forward for the administration?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think there's a number of effects. I mean, the inquiry alone has real effects, and I think we forget this a lot. But anytime you are under this kind of pressure as an administration to turn over documents, for witnesses to go forward, you have to devote a certain amount of time, energy, personnel to this inquiry. And that takes your eye off other things you want to be doing and could be doing, whether it's immigration, whether it's, you know, what's going on in Syria. So there is a very practical toll these investigations take on a president and an administration in terms of all the energy that's focused on this. And then, of course, you know, we are entering an election year. So you have an administration focused on a reelection bid, you know, which I think, you know, unfortunately puts all of us as Americans in a position where we are looking at another year without much getting done in Congress. You know, it's very, very hard for Congress to pass legislation at this point. And, of course, Democrats, this was one of the reasons Nancy Pelosi was, you know, very, very concerned about moving forward with this initially, because she does not want to be seen, and Bernie Sanders made this point last night, they don't want Democrats to be seen as so focused on removing Trump that they've taken their eye off the ball in terms of what needs to be done for the American public and what they promised to do when they took the House. You know, so everybody sort of is put in an odd position by the inquiry. But you talk to Democrats, and I've talked to so many of them, and they say they had no choice once the transcript of the call was released. Even ones who were reluctant to move to impeachment in purple states have said that they really felt like they had no choice but to support this now.
Professor Zeno, we know that you have to take your leave very shortly. I'd like to ask one question about guidance as how we start to think critically going forward, trying to leave bitter partisanship behind. What should we, as citizens of a democracy, be looking out for, thinking about, asking ourselves or asking our representatives, or otherwise be doing as we watch the next chapter of this democracy unfold?
I mean, what I say is that I would, you know, number one, like people to stop focusing on individuals, whether it's President Trump, Nancy Pelosi, Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, and start focusing more on structure and organization. Because if you're going to fix some of what is ailing us now, it is going to be a structural fix. Changing the person in office does very little to change the system.
Understood. And with that, we are going to have to sign off. Professor Zeno, thank you so much. We hope to have you back on again. There's lots to learn.
Thank you so much, Dr.
Me.
Zeno.
Thank you. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
World and national news. Here is the latest update from Fox News Radio on 1460 WVOX.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. Turkey's President Erdogan says he'll only speak with President Trump about a ceasefire in Syria, not Vice President Pence or Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. They fly to Turkey today, and Pompeo says he expects to speak with Erdogan.
We need them to stand down. We need a ceasefire, at which point we can begin to put this all back together again.
Secretary Pompeo on Fox Business Network. All 12 candidates at the Democrats' debate in Ohio say they agree with impeachment. Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders on CNN.
No one is above the law, and that includes the President of the United States.
The idea that we have a President of the United States who is prepared to hold back national security money to one of our allies in order to get dirt on a presidential candidate is beyond comprehension.
Warren got the most speaking time and took the most shots from the other Democrats on stage as a now co-front runner in the polls with Joe Biden. America's listening to Fox News.
It's the latest from Fox News Podcasts, The Campaign with Brett Baer. With updates from reporters on the trail and in-studio experts, Brett keeps you informed on the 2020 race. Go to foxnewspodcasts.com and download The Campaign with Brett Baer now.
I'm Maria Bartiromo from Fox Business. My parents lived the American dream. My father cooked in his restaurant. I was the coat check girl. Today, I'm still working the hardest I've ever worked, giving my viewers every tool I can to help them succeed.
I'm Stuart Varney from Fox Business. My first investment, traveling the world for about 5 years and ending up right here in America. Damn good investment, actually. Fox Business.
Invested in you.
The Fox News Rundown is a weekday morning podcast that dives deep into the major and controversial stories of the day. Hosted by the anchors of Fox News Radio. Subscribe now to hear a perspective of news you won't find anywhere else. Listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
Hi, let me tell you a bit about Olivet Gospel Church. My name is Pastor Russell McLeod, and for over 20 years, I have been pastor of this evangelical church. At Olivet, we seek to worship God in the beauty of holiness and to engage in a simple obedience to the Word of God. We have a growing and diverse community of worshipers who celebrate Christ so that you never forget the refreshing sense of deliverance and victory you experience in worship. When you visit Olivet Gospel Church, you leave with tools to be a builder in God's kingdom. Let me invite you to visit our place of worship at 3900 Dyer Avenue, the corner of 233rd Street in the Bronx, every Sunday at 8 in the morning, or for a second service at 11. You will be thrilled to participate in the praise and worship and receive an inspirational and comforting message from God's Word. Whoever you are, you will be at home at Olivet Gospel Church. God has given this church a history of ministry that goes back almost 50 years in the Bronx. Come, God will remove the roadblocks in your life. I am Reverend Dr. Russell McLeod.
Stay airborne with us each and every day at 1460 on your AM dial or streaming live right now at WVOX.com. Better yet, download the WVOX app and take us with you wherever you go.
1460 WVOX.
Let's return now to the ballot box with your hosts, Tamar Tate and Nita Lubin, brought to you by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. Once again, the ballot box on 1460 WVOX.
Hi, welcome back to the ballot box. I'm Tamar Tate, and I'm here with my co-host, Nita Lubin. Nita gave us a very detailed history earlier in the show. And for those listeners who joined us during Dr. Zano's interview, I would just like to return to a few important takeaways about the League of Women Voters in New Rochelle so people can hopefully learn more about what we do and why it's so important. You know, the first time I reached out to the League of Women Voters, they invited me to volunteer for an afternoon on a voter registration drive. I sat at a table at one of our local college campuses and I spoke with students about why their votes matter. And it was really wonderful and inspirational to hear young people's ideas on what government should be able to do. I registered about 25 or 30 new voters that afternoon, and it was so exciting to be part of an organization that motivates people to get involved in a meaningful way. You know, they say democracy isn't a spectator sport, and we can choose to either wring our hands over issues that concern us, or we can roll up our sleeves and do something, and that's what the League of Women Voters is for. League of Women Voters in New Rochelle registers voters, disseminates information about voting. We help make this a basic right of citizenship, a reality for every citizen, and we are completely nonpartisan. We provide information on community issues through this radio show. We also have a cable TV show called City People and Issues, and we have something called Coffee and Conversation at the Nurse Shell Public Library, where every month we have speakers, and we organize events to introduce candidates for state and local office, and we encourage voters to submit questions for debate. Our goal is to encourage informed and active participation in government and influence public policy through education and advocacy, and we will never support or oppose any political party or candidate. So we urge anyone and everyone who's listening, if you'd like to get more involved, please volunteer with the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. We run voter registration drives throughout the year, and we'd love to have you get involved the same way I did that first time. Actually, we have a number of dates and events that we'd like to share with you today. Obviously, the first and most important is we have an election coming up, and this is what we're all about. The next election's Tuesday, November 5th. Polls are going to be open from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. Most of you are familiar with our voter guide. The League of Women Voters every year publishes a voter guide, and the 2019 voter guide is out. It's been distributed locally, but you can also access it on 411.org. That's online, 411.org, and this is the website containing the most up-to-date information on the candidates. And the reason you probably want to check out that website is because the information there is supplied by the candidate themselves and the Board of Elections. Registered voters in New Rochelle are going to be voting on candidates for Westchester County Court Judge, Westchester County Family Court Judge, Westchester County Legislature, District 10, which is part of Eastchester, part of New Rochelle, and part of Tuckahoe. We're also going to be voting on New Rochelle Mayor, New Rochelle City Council Districts 1 through 6, and State Supreme Court Justice. So there's actually a lot of candidates up this year, even though it's not a national election. A lot is going on locally. And really, you want to go out and vote and have an impact on what's happening on a grassroots level, because someone recently said to me, if the Secretary of State and your trash collector both go on vacation, who are you going to miss more? Chances are it's the person who affects you locally. All these offices are up for grabs, so please get out there and vote.
And there is almost no excuse to get out there, to not get out there and vote. This next item is a game changer, folks. New York has joined the 30-some-odd states in early voting. We have 9 additional days, including weekends, prior to November 5th, to get out to the voting booth, October 26th through November 3rd. Be careful, though. The voting booth may not be your normal November 5th voting location. We know that for residents of New Rochelle and Pelham, the early voting location is at the City Hall Annex. This is right behind City Hall, 90 Beaufort Place in New Rochelle. And let me read you the days and times that they're opened. If you have a pencil, take these down. If not, I can give you a website that you can go to. But for those anxious to know now, the 90 Beaufort Place, New Rochelle voting location will be open Saturday, October 26th, and Sunday, October 27th, from 12 to 5 p.m. It will be open Monday, October 28th, Wednesday, October 30th, and Friday, November 1st, from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. It will be open Tuesday, October 29th, and Thursday, October 31st, from 12 to 8 p.m., and on the weekend, Saturday, November 2nd, and Sunday, November 3rd, from 12 to 5 p.m. On Election Day, November 5th, you'll be at your regular polling place from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m., but the early voting for Pelham and New Rochelle residents will be at the City Hall Annex behind City Hall. If you go, if you in Westchester, if that is not your polling area, if you're not from Pelham or New Rochelle, You can go online to the League of Women Voters of New York State. On their homepage, click on early voting. And you folks in Mamaroneck, in Chappaqua, in Rye will have explicit directions to where your early polling place is.
There's really no reason not to vote this year. And actually, this is what Dr. Zeno, our guest earlier, was speaking to. She said that
it's about time.
It's about time. There are other states that have had early voting, and I don't know why it's taken us so long to get it in New York State, but it makes so much sense because, you know, not everyone's available on a Tuesday in November to get to the polls. And hopefully this encourages everyone to get out there and vote. So everyone should also check your registration before your election. Mm-hmm. You can call the Westchester Board of Elections, or they have a website. It's called citizenparticipation.westchestergov.com. And if you have any questions, please reach out and just make sure that you are registered.
New item. On Monday, October 21st, the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle is sponsoring a candidates forum at City Hall. This is specifically to meet the candidates who are running for the contested seats in our area. The contested seats for mayor, for city council districts number 1 and number 5, and for county board of legislators district number 10. The forum is going to take place in the city council auditorium at City Hall. And your candidates will be there. The planned schedule, again, details coming, is as follows. 6 p.m., Monday, October 21st, at 6 p.m., the incumbent District 10 county legislator, Damon Maher, and the challenger, Christopher Garrity, will be on stage. At 6:45 p.m., incumbent New Rochelle Mayor Noam Bramson and challenger Brendan Conroy will be there. At 7:30 p.m., District 1 incumbent councilman Louis Trangucci and challenger Martha Lopez, and the District 5 seat to replace Barry Fertel, Sarah Kay and Sarah Langlois. This event is an opportunity for you to actually get out there and meet the candidates. It's going to be moderated by a person from outside of New Rochelle and will be taped by New Rochelle TV. Here's a nice feature. Any questions you have for the incumbents or the challengers can be submitted at the event or submitted in advance. So you have time to think through what you need to think through and pose a question that's meaningful and makes sense and important. In order to submit the questions in advance, you got to email them to LWV,
that's
New Rochelle.
League of Women Voters.
Correct.
New Rochelle.
LWV New Rochelle at gmail.com.
Even if you can't make it to the forum, you can definitely still send in questions. Mm-hmm. So please, if you have any questions for any of these candidates, send them to us and we will do our best to make sure we ask them. Each of the candidates are going to provide opening statements, and then they're going to be answering these questions. So we really encourage everyone to send us their questions for the candidates. And please come to the forum. I mentioned earlier in our conversation that we were going to be having an event at the New Rochelle Public Library. That's coming up October 18th from 9:30 to 11. And our guest will be James Maizano. Please join us. This has been Tamar Tate. I'm here with my co-host, Nina Luban, and we'd like to thank you for listening to The Ballot Box, a production of the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. And we hope you'll tune in again for our next show on Wednesday, November 20th at 9 a.m.
Good day and good voting.